Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Pain We Carry, Healing from Complex PTSD for People of Color, by Natalie Y. Gutierrez, LMFT, foreword by Jennifer Mullen, Psy D, narrated by L. Malaika Cooper. Publisher's Note: This publication is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is sold with the understanding that the publisher is not engaged in rendering psychological, financial, legal, or other professional services. If expert assistance or counseling is needed, the services of a competent professional should be sought. Foreword. We live in a world where humanity collectively continues to struggle with inexplicable loss, the burden of deep shame, and difficulty maintaining healthy forms of intimacy. Historical and intergenerational suffering have been shouldered by BIPOC for centuries. However, with the pandemic and widespread public displays of racialized violence, what was once dismissed by mainstream America is now beckoning to be digested and addressed. It is time for global action. This begins with collective healing. As someone who facilitates, teaches, and holds space for big emotions, my life's work is not just as a clinical psychologist, but also as a midwife for people who desire more from the therapeutic relationship. Work through those big feelings. Embody that rage. Make space for the deep grief. Create relationships with your ancestors. Figure out who you were prior to the touch of colonization. In founding Decolonizing Therapy, I discovered a part of myself that wanted so badly for the mental health systems to meet me, to hold grief for me, to show me what adults couldn't give me. I recall one of our passionate car conversations where Nat said, "The mental health system is incomplete." My response, "It sure is." Who exactly do these systems serve? We were clear they didn't serve people like us well. Natalie has dedicated much of her life to holding the parts in people that they are often too overwhelmed, overworked, and fearful to hold. She has articulated the effects of racial trauma on the well-being and souls of people of color, our descendants, and our cultures in this book. The Pain We Carry offers a lens into the deepest recesses of trauma, how it shows up and how it affects our relationships, well-being, and the way that safety appears to often evade our brown and black bodies. The book makes me smile and feel seen as a psychologist of color, as someone who teaches about sacred, righteous rage and the importance of honoring this sacred and vital emotion. This book offers a lens on humanizing emotions and working with them rather than against them. From identifying our states of activation to understanding the intense effects of toxic stress on our bodies and psyches, this book brings us back into our bodies. It humanizes attachment wounding and offers teachings and exercises that allow for a connection to our emotions, humanity, and ancestry. I trust that this book and these practices will bring all who read it relief from suffering and a head start toward the process of needing to peel in order to heal. Dr. Jennifer Mullen, the Rage Doctor, founder, Decolonizing Therapy. Introduction. Racism has stolen our emotional safety. Dear survivor, Let's start this conversation with a reminder. You are a resilient soul. If you've never been told this, I'm so glad you're here so I can tell you. I have so much gratitude for you and your openness as we begin this healing journey together. I want to say that I know some of you might be so tired of being resilient, that resilience has felt exhausting, that having to be strong has depleted many of your inner resources, and what you truly wish for is peace and safety. Shit has been really rough, hasn't it? I'm thinking of your heart right now. As I write this book, I deeply wish things were better for you and all our communities. Things haven't felt good for a while. Part of me really wishes I knew all the right words to say to make all your pain go away. Heck, I wish I even knew those words for myself. I'm writing this book during a time that's been quite challenging for all of us. And by the time it's published, I don't know what more will have happened. I write this book with the lens of today, holding hope in my heart for tomorrow. I offer this book to you not knowing exactly what's going on in your life right now, but wanting to be a pillar of strength for you. I also want to say that you might feel uncomfortable as you're listening when I say hard things about police brutality or white supremacy, especially if you're a member of law enforcement, white or other dominant groups, or have close proximity to them. Or perhaps a perspective of mine here differs from yours, and that's okay. Your discomfort and ambivalence are welcome here. Journey with them as you begin to take the risk of opening your heart more to your experience. Your discomfort isn't dangerous, and it has the ability to break you open to loving and seeing differently. Our discomfort can help make us aware of our biases and enable us to see our own vulnerability and that of others. Just know that all that's written here comes from a place of love and open-heartedness for you. So much harm continues to be inflicted on Black and Brown communities. State-sanctioned violence is an oppressive system, perpetuating racism on Black, Indigenous, and people of color. We are people living in Black and Brown skin feeling unsafe to be ourselves. Who and how we are is on my mind. Black and brown, queer, neurodivergent with various abilities, wondering if you'll ever belong. Cisgender, non-binary, trans, all who feel lonely and disconnected from themselves. Those among us with racialized identities and lineages harmed for centuries by racism, genocide, war, and colonization. I want to take a moment to pause and honor the collective grief for all Indigenous children found buried in unmarked graves near several Canadian residential schools. This is the very devastating impact of genocide, colonization, forced assimilation, and white body supremacy on Indigenous peoples of Turtle Island. This is part of the painful legacies carried by Native Americans. We continue feeling the brunt of harm from white body supremacy on our mind, body, and spirit. All Black folks, Indigenous folks, and people of color, including mixed race folks, are in my thoughts while I write. We're the global majority. I'll be just as honest with you as I ask you to be with yourself. I've had a really hard time writing. I've been in my head a lot, which happens to be one of my survival tools. My sense of overwhelm in a world that's hurting all around me for as long as I can remember has kept me avoidant, protecting myself. I get stuck in my head, avoiding all the feelings in my heart, all to feel safer, even for one teeny moment. You've sought out this book, so you know what I mean about having survival tools when things are just too hard. It's a privilege to go through life not having the way you express yourself or live your life be policed. It's a privilege to feel comfortable writing and speaking in your natural voice because the world hasn't tried to silence you. Internalized racism and classism have taught me to hate the way I speak. I struggled to write this book because I have lived afraid of what people might think of me, and I was taught to shrink and silence my voice. Fear says I must prove everything I say to the white people who read this book, or they will judge me and maybe even try to dismiss my words. This happens often. Communities of color are asked for burden of proof that racism still exists. Can you relate to the fear and added burden around having enough proof structural racism is real and terribly impacts black and brown communities? There aren't enough books that can be written to fully speak to all the ways this is true. And because of that, like me, you're left defending your story and what you know to be true without all the evidence. How do you prove what you know to be true from lived experience? Literature can't back you up because there are fewer researchers and authors of the global majority. And how do you grow to accept and love your voice when the sound of your voice has been called ghetto, uneducated, and angry? At times, I found myself code-switching in my own writing, pandering to the white people who would read this to prove myself when this very book is meant to be for you. That is the insidiousness of white body supremacy. Code switching, i.e., modifying your speech, accent, or vocabulary in the presence of white people, can sometimes be revered as folks' ability to assimilate or fit in among various groups, especially dominant groups. But code switching can be stressful and results in loss of identity or self-rejection. I can tell you I've grown tired of being that palatable Latina they've wanted me to be. When you're having to be a chameleon that changes colors to match your environment for survival and in order to be accepted and loved, imagine what that does. Your heart breaks receiving explicit messages from groups in power that the only way you will be truly loved and accepted is through assimilation. This shit cuts deep. So deep, it becomes trauma. So let's talk about trauma for a moment. Trauma is the imprint of chronic, toxic stress in our minds and bodies. It's the powerlessness we feel when we cannot overcome something or someone causing us immense pain. Trauma robs us of our self-love and completely changes our sense of safety in the world. Trauma can be a single incident experience or a series of painful incidents over time. It can start from before you were born or at any stage in your life. When your pain isn't met with love and support, your traumatic experience can lead to post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, or complex post-traumatic stress disorder, CPTSD. And when it comes to experiences of racism and oppression, even when you receive love and support, you can still develop PTSD or CPTSD because feeling othered every day can rob you of your sense of safety in the world. As a Black, Indigenous, and person of color, you might find yourself struggling with accumulated trauma or prolonged exposure to traumatic experiences, including facing racial trauma, microaggressions, and marginalization regularly. Here are some ways you might experience this struggle. You might waver between depression and anxiety. You might experience despair, maybe even sometimes wanting to die. Your heart might race when you're stopped by police. You might experience intrusive thoughts and memories of times when you were discriminated against, called racial slurs or other oppressive slurs, or abused in any way. You might have mastered the survival technique of numbing out or disassociating to avoid feeling your feelings. You might feel like an imposter, no matter how accomplished you are, and feel a constant sense of otherness. This is CPTSD. You might already know this on a soul level. Let this serve as more confirmation and validation of what your heart already knows and might have just not had the words to describe. Sometimes the diagnosis CPTSD doesn't even fully encapsulate all the trauma Black and Indigenous peoples experience in the inside and outside world when there's still a cultural genocide happening. This book also welcomes you to allow yourself to define your trauma and others to define theirs. I don't know your exact trauma, and I won't pretend that I do, but I know mine. I predict there's confluence in our pain. I want to tell you that you're not crazy, and the whole reason I'm writing this book is because many Black folks, Indigenous folks, and folks of color are experiencing symptoms of CPTSD disguised as anxiety and depression, often even being misdiagnosed and misunderstood. I really want to validate that the pain you're feeling is very real and help you understand it. First things first, though, I want to share that I have privilege, more than some people in my community because of colorism. I don't always feel the privilege when my intersectional identities meet an oppressive world and I'm confronted with racism, sexism, classism, and ableism. But I know I benefit from my light skin because even within our Black and brown communities, we have different experiences based on the advantage given to lighter skin. I also need to say that even this book isn't enough to speak to all of the pain you carry. It isn't lost on me that not all people of the global majority have the same experience culturally around the world. Just like Latine experiences aren't monolithic, the same is true for all racialized identities. Our experiences aren't universal. Especially for those of us reading this book who have lighter skin, along with other intersecting identities, term coined by Kimberly Crenshaw, that are also marginalized. Us light-skinned people of color will never know what it's like to live in a Black body, and will never know all of the real dangers Black people face living in the U.S. and around the world. We will know some, but we won't know all. That's just the reality of racism and colorism, which create ruptures and painful dynamics between family when we're treated differently because of the hues of our skin. On a similar note, we also share a lot, including the impacts of different historical trauma. Because we all have different experiences as the global majority, we will need more than just my book to tell the story of the pain carried by all people of color. I put so much pressure on myself to have this book encapsulate all the pain that we carry until I realized that expectation was my own internalized white supremacy culture. I was expecting perfection and was never satisfied. But now I know in my soul that this book is meant to witness the pain we carry and to encourage us to continue writing this shared story for our communities. I surely cannot be the spokesperson for all. As we think about all the voices and stories we want represented in books, I hope you'll consider helping write them. This world needs your words, too. I hope you will be inspired to write books that center the healing of your culture and speak to all the burdens you carry from Western and non-Western culture. Much of the Latine identity today comes from past trauma. History reminds us of the colonization of the land belonging to indigenous peoples in North, Central, and South America and the Caribbean, along with the Atlantic slave trade that eventually culminated in much of the Latine identity. My ancestors are a mix of Spaniard, African, and Taino, and Boricuan. I come from a family of curanderas, spiritual healers, inspired by the African Yoruba tradition. Most have abandoned the practice due to its misassociation with evil. For so long, I've had a thirst for connection to spiritual healing. You probably know this feeling too, robbed and disconnected from the healing practices of ancestors. They were said to be devil's work by white missionaries or settlers or slave traders. Many of our empowering and peaceful ancestral practices have been colonized and demonized. We have internalized messages that reject the very healing work curated by elders and ancestors. It's a privilege to even know your ancestors, as folks with lineages of genocide and enslavement have been disconnected from knowledge of their ancestry. That alone carries deep pain and grief. If this is your truth, even with the loss of your family's history, your ancestors live within you and aren't lost. It's possible to begin creating an ancestral practice, even from scratch, feeling for what intuitively comes up for you and trusting yourself as a guide. I choose to do trauma work, and trauma work also chose me. For over a decade, I've held many painful stories of black and brown bodies in my therapy office. The more years that passed, the clearer it became that suffering is tied to racialized trauma and systemic issues beyond my patient's control. Many would numb out the grief, rage, anxiety, and hurt they experienced daily from microaggressions, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, and ableism, depending on their intersectional identities. So much of how we define ourselves was learned from racist institutions. The mental health field wasn't doing enough to understand this and was actually quicker to pathologize patients like mine, for example, referring to deep fears as paranoid or delusional. But here's what I was noticing. Of course you feel afraid and distrustful when you live in a black body and are approached by police. Your visceral bodily reactions happen because history shows implicit bias in a police state that has led to present-day lynching of black bodies. Of course you struggle with internalized racism and find it hard to feel self-acceptance. You've been taught to criticize who you are, how you look, how much space you take up, ways you show up. Even the way you speak is policed. You survive by remaining very aware of how you might be perceived by folks of dominant groups, because being othered or seen as dangerous due to racism and implicit bias is life-threatening when you're existing in a black or brown body. Of course you feel anger, anxiety, and grief after so many generations experiencing racial trauma in your family. You have legacy wounds from genocide, enslavement, war, and colonization. Your pain makes sense. You make sense. I want to take a moment to appreciate the work of Dr. Joy DeGruy. In her book, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, she writes a deep history of how the era of enslavement has gravely impacted Black bodies and how centuries of enslavement continue to impact Black folks today. I also want to honor the work of Resma Menakem, whose book, My Grandmother's Hands, has also illuminated the somatic impact of racialized trauma. They've helped inspire my own learning growth and humility. If these works are unfamiliar to you, please seek them on your healing journey. For quite some time, my rage was how I protected myself from the world and how I learned to communicate my needs through intimidation and aggression. Seeing violence in my home taught me to resolve conflict through fighting and to get my needs met through yelling or hitting. I also learned to anticipate violence, gauging the moods of my parents and others so that I could know how to avoid confrontation, whether through shrinking myself and playing small, people-pleasing, or fighting back, all to emotionally and physically survive. And then I grew to become a teenager who was raging and angry with the world, feeling a fiery anger inside that sometimes turned to outward expressions of explosive anger, all while the world told me to exile my rightful rage. I had so many reasons to be rageful. I now know my rage was trying to call out for help. It needed a witness. My rage wanted the hurt to stop, from the world and in my home. You might know what growing up seeing violence in the home as a child feels like, with your hurt and anger unwitnessed, shamed, and invalidated. Your anger may have kept people away as a form of protection and anticipatory self-defense. Your anger may feel responsible and burdened to keep you safe in a world that has hurt you and your ancestors. Today, I make a conscious effort to continue getting to know my rage so that it doesn't take me over and leak out onto the people I love. I continue to try and take the risk of being vulnerable with others. Vulnerability hasn't come easy for me, and I'm sure you can relate to that. When you're trying to take a risk and be vulnerable, you might find yourself feeling tense and anticipating that bad things will happen. When you've lived through childhood trauma and betrayal, your brain reminds you that vulnerability can lead to more pain. So we tend to create all kinds of armor against it. Many of us often perceive threat in our environments, exacerbated by living in a structurally racist and violent society that repeatedly oppresses non-white groups. We tend to struggle trusting others, including people in our own communities and even ourselves. We might even unconsciously become our own oppressors and continue mistreating ourselves and others, including our friends, partners, and children. We can find ourselves perpetuating the very systems of oppression and abuse in our own homes, within our own minds and bodies, families and communities, taught to us by white supremacy. This might look like screaming at our loved ones and hitting or shaming our children. This might look like invalidating and shaming the vulnerability in others. We can no longer hide behind our wounds if we are to foster healing within and in our communities. We cannot dismiss or minimize violence in the home or toward our communities as normal or believe that we are fine despite being physically hurt by our caregivers or anybody. I assure you, we are not fine. We've struggled in relationships, with setting boundaries, and with our own self-worth. Somewhere within us exists rage, insecurity, and resentment deeply rooted. I can admit to you that growing up in a household where I was often hit produced the rage I still carry today. It has been flamed by the many other times I experienced traumatic stress and betrayal as a child by adults I trusted. Yet I chose to do my healing work to end the pattern for future generations. Every day, I choose to still take this healing journey. The ancestors aren't done with me yet. The legacy burdens of abuse passed down.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?